This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark and Roshan Kanitsan. It's 7.06 a.m., Wednesday the 1st of July, and in about 15 minutes, we're going to be speaking with Datin Azlin Osman Rani, Director of ICMR, the Institute of Capital Markets Research Malaysia, on the role that capital markets could play post-COVID-19. But before that, we're taking a look at how markets closed.
No guesses here. It's all green, actually. Asia closed in the green. The Nikkei was up 1.3%, Korea was up 0.7%, Hang Seng up 0.5% there, Shanghai Composite up 0.8%, Singapore up 0.6%, and the KLCI also closed up 0.4%. If we take a look at the US, all three major indices in the green there, the Dow was up 0.8%, S&P up 1.5%, and the Nasdaq saw it 1.9% here. If you look at some of the most active counters in the States, the top three, Tesla, Apple, and Boeing, Amazon and Facebook rounding up the top five. Number six there, Microsoft. So a lot of activity yesterday. I think Tesla saw $17.8 billion in shares traded.
Interesting. No wonder the indexes have seen such movement. But this morning, to give us a little bit more insight into the global markets, we have with us Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda. Thanks very much for joining us this morning, Jeffrey. Now, Asian equities have swung back into the black after strong housing data as well and boosted US markets. Are markets in this region flip-flopping without any clear direction at present? What kind of strategy would work well in such an environment?
Yeah, we've definitely seen some sideways price action. And if you do look at the main indices, and I know we're concentrating on the quarter-on-quarter performance this morning as we move into the first day of Q3. But for the last month, the S&P 500 has been moving broadly sideways and, in fact, has been flirting with support at 3,000. It's avoided closing below that again overnight, but this is still a risk. So I think we've definitely seen a bit of momentum ebbing out of global stock markets since that huge rally off that mid-March capitulation low. As far as strategies go, I don't think there's anything wrong with taking a profit. No one ever went broke taking a profit. So definitely being perhaps overweight cash at the moment, looking to re-engage on any corrective dips, and more of the consumer defensive, weighting more towards consumer defensive dividend stocks is probably the better or the more safer way to construct one's portfolios until we get a much clearer picture of what the next big direction is for stocks.
Right, Jeffrey. And, you know, if we take a look at gold, it's at $1,783 per ounce right now, inching close to that psychologically important 1,800 level. What's pushing prices here higher? Because markets are in risk-on mode, yet this precious metal is a safe haven bet. And it's been on a rally since July, at the very least.
Yeah, there's a couple of things going on at work here. One of them is that real interest rates, so that's interest rates that are adjusted for inflation, in the United States are almost all negative all the way out to 30 years on the curve. So negative interest rates, gold doesn't pay an interest rate when you buy it. But if interest rates are negative, that's a big driver to buy gold. Secondly, we're seeing safe haven flows here. Clearly, the United States doesn't have COVID-19 under control, and there's the fears that we are going to see a reemergence of lockdowns in major economies. I think this fear is also driving these haven flows. But I will emphasize that $1,800 an ounce is a very, very formidable technical level. It was a weekly high through all of 2011 and 2012. So it's a big wall to climb in the near term.
And Jeffrey, emerging market currencies like the rupee and the baht are beginning to climb again after some earlier sell-offs. Is it the right time now to diversify from the US dollar and take a perhaps risk-on pivot to those currencies?
Well, it's a tale of two cities with these the currencies, to be honest. We've actually already seen a lot of Southeast Asia's currencies rally very strongly. We've seen a general rotation out of the US dollar and into a more risk-seeking positioning over the course of June. And that's actually been reflected in the appreciation of the Indonesian rupiah and the Thai baht, the Malaysian ringgit. The Thai baht's up 10% over the last couple of months, I believe. The Indonesian rupee is a different story, though. They have severe fiscal and monetary policy challenges in India, as well as this increasing COVID-19 outbreak, plus their tense relations with China. It's really hard to construct a positive story for India at the moment. I would expect to see the Indian rupee continue to depreciate. But for the rest of Southeast Asia, as long as we remain on track for recovery in the region, I can see most currencies, including the Thai baht, continuing to strengthen in Q3.
Right, and the PBOC is implementing new monetary policy tools to ensure that liquidity reaches the real economy in China. How is the PBOC's performance as compared to the U.S. Federal Reserve so far in terms of being able to essentially trickle down funds to small and medium businesses?
Yeah, it's definitely a difference in approach here. The Federal Reserve is implementing, obviously, this massive quantitative easing where they're buying debt right across different spectrums, from corporate debt to government debt. And when they do that, they inject money into the economy. They also do have a Main Street lending program. They have a number of programs. It's hard to keep up with them all. but I think that one is being administered by local banks in the States. And I do believe they've had administrative problems with that, just the mechanics of getting that money out. So they've got challenges. The PBOC is not engaging in quantitative easing. It's preferring to drop banks' reserve ratio requirements and to encourage lending. For instance, they told the main Chinese banks last week that they had to forgo profits for the good of the country and lend more, sort of a much more less subtle approach to getting money out there. So they're both taking different approaches. I think that the pullback in China hasn't been as severe as it has been in the United States, clearly. And so the urgency for the PBOC to engage in unconventional monetary policy isn't there. They're preferring to do it through much more traditional measures.
But on a wider basis, I mean, all eyes are on China to see how they come out of this COVID-19 crisis. And while China's manufacturing PMI showed an uptick in June, export orders continue to contract, suggesting that a complete recovery hasn't yet arrived. So what kind of a growth path do you foresee for China as we go into this month?
Well, we are definitely seeing a trend of increasing activity, rebounding activity in China. It's not a huge rebound like we've seen in, say, stock markets, not that sort of level of increase, but it's a slow and steady growth. We have the Kaizen manufacturing, which had come out today in China, which is the unofficial one, which should show yet another improvement to about, I think, 50.5. I think what we're seeing here is a recovery in domestic activity. But if the rest of the world is in a recession or in a COVID-19 lockdown, China can build as much as they want. There'll be nobody there to buy it. So I think the recovery in the export-led market is going to take longer than it will for the domestic recovery to really take place. China was the first in. They managed it very aggressively, the COVID-19, and it's unsurprising that they're emerging first from this path. But it's definitely going to be a very uneven growth, simply because much of their export market around the world are still trying to deal with the COVID-19 and the slowdowns that it has brought.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Jeffrey. That was Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda, giving us his thoughts into global markets, including that China's seeing some slow and steady recovery. But, you know, I think we started to see this a couple of months ago, right, when Chinese factories first started reopening. But the wider world was still in the midst of trying to get a handle on the COVID-19 outbreak. So, you know, even though Chinese factories were able to restart, a lot of companies couldn't receive their goods, couldn't pay them, essentially.
Yeah, you can produce the goods, but there's no demand. Then there's nowhere really to ship the goods,
no.
And there's no one really buying. So we've talked about how this is the biggest demand disruption since World War II. This is not a small thing that we've gone through. But you know, while we're talking about this, if you look at some of the logistics players, they've seen some good results there. FedEx Corp reported its consolidated results for the fourth quarter ended May yesterday, and the logistics giant saw its share jump 8% after a surge in pandemic-fueled home deliveries helped it beat Wall Street's quarterly profit and revenue targets. Another logistics player's really benefiting here.
Yeah, so FedEx used an efficiency drive as well as a surge in health equipment deliveries to shore up their earnings, softening the drag on profit from an increase in less lucrative residential deliveries. Their adjusted earnings dropped to $2.53 a share for the fiscal fourth quarter. Analysts had predicted $1.53 for the period, which ran through May, according to an average of estimates compiled by Bloomberg. Revenue slipped to $17.4 billion from $17.8 billion, and adjusted net income came in at $663 million, down from $1.3 billion just a year ago.
Yeah, their adjusted operating margin also surpassed Wall Street's expectations that it was at 5.2% versus an expectation of 3.4%. Now, just taking a look at FedEx's price this morning, it closed at $140 there with 14 buys, 15 holds, and one sell. Just one sell there. That's a brave analyst right there saying to sell FedEx.
Swimming against the current.
Yeah, consensus target price for 12 months, $149.26 there. 26 cents. That's for FedEx there. And the logistics players have seen a lot of activity. And let's see how the rest of them have done.
Absolutely. But, amidst all of this COVID-19 related news, there is also nevertheless the fight between the US and China is still underway, because yesterday the US Federal Communications Commission formally designated Chinese firms Huawei and ZTE Corp as national security threats. So this declaration essentially bars US firms from tapping an $8.3 billion government fund to purchase equipment from these companies. So it will likely affect many of these small rural American carriers who do rely on the fund as well as their cheap network equipment.
Yeah, this is just a continuing escalation between the US and China. We've seen the US government instruct other government entities, to whether it's pension funds or other related funds, to stop investing in US in Chinese companies. It's just this escalating tension between the two of them. And Huawei has, and ZTE for that matter, have been a big tool or device in this proxy war.
Yeah, so even while COVID-19 is still ongoing, US-China tensions are still nevertheless carrying on. But right now, we have some messages for you. And then up next, we're going to be speaking with Datin Azlin Osman Rani, Director of ICMR, the Institute of Capital Markets Research Malaysia, on the role of capital markets could play post-COVID-19. So be sure to stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.